Welcome to Breakthrough Success. I'm your host, Mark Roberti, the content marketing expert, bringing you 5 new episodes every week where I and top-level guests teach you how to take your business to the next level and achieve your breakthrough. Hello, Breakthrough Success listeners. I just wanted you all to know before the episode actually starts, I've been working a little bit behind the scenes to give you something really special. So a while ago, I wrote my book, Content Marketing Secrets, which helps people create, promote, and optimize their content for growth and revenue. And I just put the finishing touches together to offer that for free to anyone who is interested. So if you want your free copy of Content Marketing Secrets, all you have to do is head over to markgoberti.com/book. Now, let's jump right into the episode. In the present, we are doing so many different things. We're doing things for our business, we're doing things for our lives. Sometimes we're just doing a lot of busy work. But one of the distinctions between busy work and productive work is what are the things that we do now that lead us to a better future, that lead us to our ideal vision? And part of doing the work that leads you to that better future is actually to design your future now so you know what you have to be doing now to reach that destination. So we're going to talk a lot about that during this episode. And who better to talk about that than today's guest who helps individuals, teams, and businesses design a future that they can't wait to live into. The international keynote speaker, trainer, executive coach, and author works with the best of the best. And his latest book, Design Your Future, details 3 simple steps that we can use to stop drifting and take command of our lives. Today's guest for episode 215 of the Breakthrough Success Podcast is none other than Dominic Cortuccio. Dominic, it is such a pleasure to have you on the show.
Mark, man, I want to have what you're having, dude, because the energy and the power that you just showed up with is infectious. So I'm geared up for our next 40 minutes together, man.
Dominic, I'm really excited to dive into this interview. And like one of the big things, we're all doing work, but where is that work actually leading? And I know that that's part of the reason that maybe you wrote Design Your Future, like just giving people some kind of way to figure out where their work is leading. But I wonder if you could go a little bit more into why you wrote the book and a little bit of backstory into how you got into the whole Design Your Future.
Awesome. I have to draw upon the wisdom of a man who changed my lives and I imagine changed the lives of many of your listeners, Tim Ferriss. 4-hour work week, read the book in 2009. He introduced this concept that he's fleshed out over the last like 8 or 9 years, and he calls it being lazy busy. And I think that we live in this golden era of lazy busy. And it sounds like a contradiction. Like, how could you be both lazy and busy at the same place and time? Like, aren't those two things mutually exclusive? And quite frankly, it's a phenomenon that not only exists, but I think it's pervasive in a lot of our lives today. So what I mean by that is if you find yourself in this chronic state of perpetual busyness and it's stressing you out and it's getting increasingly worse, and yet you're doing nothing to change your reality, that's lazy. It's just lazy. You're just doing indiscriminate action and it's left unchecked over a long period of time. And those are, that's a play on Tim Ferriss's words. And so I ended up writing the book because I was in corporate financial services for 15 years. I worked all of it for Prudential, specifically in a sales and sales executive role. So I led multiple teams of people nationally, sales and sales support roles. My team had a responsibility for over $1 billion worth of new business assets to bring in under management. And what I found with some of the most successful people that I managed, that I led, is that they were hitting their numbers, that they had the families and the homes and everything that they dreamed of on paper. But when they had these private moments of reflection, they would admit to me that they were starting to cave in under the pressures of the lives they've created for themselves, stress, that every day kind of bled into another. And when they woke up, you know, a few years later, they looked back at, on the years that had just passed, and not much had changed. And it started to create this future of more of the same. And so I wrote the book Design Your Future so that people could break free from this concept of drift, which I'm sure we can get into in our future questions, to break free from drift so you could take command back of your life and create a future that you can't wait to live into.
And we are going to dive into that drift idea right now, because like there are a lot of people who are maybe drifting away from their ideal future. There are other people who are drifting without really knowing it. And Dominic laid out a really important concept, lazy work. I was talking a little bit about this, but I just call this something busy work. But that idea where you're doing things, but they're not necessarily the best things for you to be doing. Like responding to emails is something that you have to do. But if you find yourself doing it for like 2 to 4 hours per day, unless that's what you're supposed to be doing, like things like that, that make you feel productive, aren't necessarily moving the ball as much as you could by doing other things. So with that in mind, like I wonder if we could get a little deeper into drifters. So can you just share with us a little bit, what is your definition of a drifter? And how do people tend to fall into that category?
Absolutely. One of my greatest mentors, who's not alive, but I read all of his work and may be familiar to many of your listeners, is Napoleon Hill. And Napoleon Hill is most well known for the book that he wrote called Think and Grow Rich, which is basically like the Bible for how to attract riches into your life. There are only 15 books that have ever been published that are non-religious texts, only 15 books that have ever sold over 50 million copies. And most of them are like Harry Potter and The Hobbit, those kinds of books. The only business book that has ever sold over 50 million copies is Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich. And he did his best work during the Great Depression era. He had a mentor by the name of Andrew Carnegie, right? So of Carnegie fame. And Andrew Carnegie told him, Napoleon, if you want to learn how to attract riches into your life, you need to interview 500 of the world's best at doing this. So he went out and he studied people like the, you know, Henry Fords, the Roosevelts, the Rockefellers, heads of state, like these people. And he mined their secrets to find out how that they built their empires. He wrote the book Think and Grow Rich. But the more interesting part of the story to me was that Carnegie said, and if you really want to understand the full human experience, you need to go out and interview 10 times as many people who at the end of their lives felt like they left chips on the table, that they did not manifest the kinds of lives that they wanted to. So Napoleon Hill, like the consummate overachiever, he went and interviewed 25,000 of these people over, a 2 to 3 decade career, 25,000 people. And he mined all of their secrets about what happens if you don't take command of your life. And he wrote this cautionary tale, a book called Outwitting the Devil. And the book was so controversial when he had written it. This was like in the 1930s, that his family buried the book. It wasn't released until 2011, I believe, because he takes some shots at religious institutions, educational systems, like some pretty powerful institutions. And inside this book, he has a conversation with the devil. It's like, I don't know if you've ever heard of the book called Conversations with God. Like this conversation is his conversation with the devil. And the devil in the book has this dialogue where he said, I enter the minds of people and I establish a habit of drifting. And once I get people to drift, I can lead them straight towards the gates of hell. And the way that he defines this concept of drift is that we think we're in control of the choices that we're making on a daily basis, when in actuality, we're just meandering through life in this hypnotic rhythm, right? Like we think we're consciously acting, but it's really our habits and our patterns that are happening below our conscious detection that are keeping us stuck in this place of drift, which is why one day bleeds into the next, 1 year bleeds into the next, not much changes, even though we have all these different hopes and dreams. And it's usually only when an outside force thrusts itself upon us, and it's usually something pretty crappy, like the loss of a loved one, an unexpected illness, losing your job, where we are shaken to our core, that we actually snap out of and wake up from drift. And those can be some of the most amazing moments in life. Like, Mark, I'm sure you've had one where you've gone through like a really crappy situation. While going through it, it was torture, but now you can look back on it and say, no, this was actually an inflection point for me becoming a better version of myself. And that's amazing. But the problem I see with that in working with my clients is that if the only catalyst for causing change in your life is an outside force thrusting itself upon you, then how in command of your life are you really? You need to be the one who can self-disrupt, break yourself free from drift so that you can consciously design that future that you're excited to live into.
And I liked how you mentioned like a big event can really have a big life-changing effect. Like, I know for Tony Robbins, like, he achieved a lot of his success when he realized he was going to be a father and he didn't want his child to live a impoverished lifestyle similar to how he lives. So like events like that can really change you. And obviously it could be like moments of joy, moments of loss, anything like that. But you mentioned how you don't want it. You don't want to just wait for an outside force to act upon you and then you stop drifting. So I'm wondering if you could share with us, how can we like stop drifting without relying on an outside force? How can we solve the problem internally?
Awesome question, man. So in the book, I talk about these two types of awakenings. There's a three-step process that I propose to breaking free from drift. And it's the ADD model, right? So it's awakening, disrupting, and designing. So it's not the traditional ADD, attention deficit disorder, but it might as well be in many of our cases. My ADD is about awakenings, disruptions, and then designing. And the first step is this creating an awakening in your life. And I distinguish awakening from pure awareness. Because I think we are aware, human beings, of a lot of things in our lives, but awareness alone doesn't change our behavior. Like Mark, you talked about, we're aware that being buried in email jail or email hell or is not a recipe for us having an optimal life. We're aware that we spend too much time on our cell phones. Smokers are aware that it's not healthy to be smoking, and yet we continue to do all of these things. So the distinction I make about awareness versus awakening, and awakening is that step where you are ready to actually take action to do something differently. And usually in awakening, there's two types of awakening I propose. It's either the unintentional awakening, which are these outside forces that thrust themselves upon us. Those are extremely valuable. They're useful. We need to know when they happen and not step over them or ignore them and catalyze them for the, you know, sometimes crises can be some of the greatest changes in our lives. But what you're talking about, what I'm most interested in, are these intentional awakenings. And the way that I see people catalyzing intentional awakenings, the first one is really along the lines of exposing ourselves to things that are different from our traditional patterns and our habits. So for example, like here's one that would probably rankle a lot of people, but this could be something as simple as, if you are a hardcore Democrat, watch Fox News. If you are a hardcore conservative, watch CNN. Like, this is a small example of just being able to challenge your patterns and habits in a different way. When you get up in the morning in a certain way, a way to create like a small awakening is to take a cold shower. Like, it actually like shocks your system into waking up at a much faster speed. It actually stimulates some of your brain cells. These are very small, like tactical and practical ways to create intentional awakenings. Bigger ones, though, if like you want real change in your life, like there's something that you've wanted in your life that you haven't gotten, one of the most tried and true processes that I walk people through, and this will be a game changer, is I lead my clients through this process of writing their own eulogy. And we spend so much time afraid of death. we ignore death, especially in our Western culture, like the society that I grew up in, potentially many of your listeners do. We think of death as something that's horrible, to be ignored, to be avoided at all costs, but it's an ultimate reality. And I like to get people present to the fact that there's going to be a day we're going to leave this earth, and presumably someone is going to stand at, like, at your funeral and read a bunch of really nice things about you that you're never going to get a chance to hear. But wouldn't it be cool if you didn't need to be there because you lived your life with such intentionality that you already knew what was going to be said about you? And so this writing your eulogy exercise is actually a way of celebrating your life. So how can you have meaningful interactions in the present moment if you don't know where you want to head? And the eulogy exercise, I ask people to focus on a few things. Number one, identify how long that it is you want to live. Not how long you think you will live. Because when I ask it differently, when I ask the question of how long you want to live, it's disconnected from any potential, like, reality check. Some people get caught up in the fact that my father died when he was 80, my grandfather died when he was 80, heart disease, whatever, I'm going to die when I'm 80. How long would you want to live? And under what conditions would you want to be living? I want to live to 121. I wrote this in the book. And I want to be healthy and active, not just in years. I want a quality of living to that age. And what's the legacy that you're leaving behind? You know, who are the people that you impacted? How are they better for you having lived? And how are you to be remembered, not from an egoistic standpoint, but from a you raised others? And when you start to get really present to those bigger things, those, like, life missions, you have a North Star. It's like a GPS system that you can now attach your daily interactions to. So the job that right now seems trivial, that maybe you're, like, stuck or feeling trapped in, can take on a new meaning because you're like, you know what, actually, this job, even though I don't love it, it can provide me the financial security that I need, that in 5 years, if I save, I can then move on with a skill set, with a money in the bank, to then take that next step that will get me towards that ultimate goal of where I want to end up when my time here is done. And that is one of the best ways to create that intentional awakening.
I really like the idea of creating the eulogy because it gives you an idea of what you want to accomplish, do, and be within your lifetime. And you mentioned that ultimate goal that we're all striving towards, and it's okay to have multiple goals, but in the end, just one life, one lifestyle, one overarching vision. And one of the things that I feel like a lot of people are experiencing right now is they set a goal or a vision. They're moving along, but at some point they feel stuck. At some point they feel like it's so distant. So how can we live in our designed futures? How can we actually get there?
Yeah, man, I really dig this conversation and the questions you're asking. So I'm this big believer. So as a bit of background, I grew up in a Catholic home. And I went to Catholic school for 7 years, and I was very well trained in the black and white nature of the world, which I later rebelled against. But I grew up in the heaven or hell, black and white, right and wrong. And I believed that, like, most things were binary. And as I've grown older, I've learned that the world is much grayer and that there's these paradoxes that we operate in all the time. We started with one. Talking about lazy and busy, the paradox of being both lazy and busy at the same time, occupying the same space. And I think another paradox is also about the future and the now. If you think about, like, Eastern philosophy is all about the power of now. Eckhart Tolle, Power of Now, you know, a hugely famous popular book. Buddhist practice, mindfulness meditation, it's all about now. There's only the present moment. Nothing else exists but right now. And I know that so many of my high achieving clients are all like, if someone tells me that I need to be present again, I'm going to strangle them or beat them over the head with a 2x4 because I get it. But what about the fact that I have a family that I'm raising, that I have, like, these ideals and goals that I want to strive for, the fact that there is a tomorrow and a tomorrow after that? How do I reconcile the power of now with the fact that there are things that I want to create in the future, goals that I want to hit? And in the Western society, we are much more concerned with future than we are in the now. And the way that I remedy that, the paradox of those two, is that those two do exist and that we have to have muscles built in both arenas. We do need to know when the moment calls for being absolutely present. We do also need to know when the moment calls for being future oriented, because it does create that North Star, that vision, like say the eulogy exercise, or maybe even something more immediate like what has to happen tonight or what has to happen next week. And so what I encourage people to do is to kind of consciously keep an awareness around the fact that you're playing with both. And it's like a dance. It is a yin and a yang. You are going to have to consciously like be calibrating the balance of what's needed where. Now, one thing for people to really need to understand, and this was something I learned in my 15 years in corporate working for Prudential, and Prudential, the division I was in was Prudential Retirement. And so we were exclusively focused on helping people to save money for their retirement years, like in their 401k and their pension plan. And what we constantly found the struggle was people would end up in retirement with not nearly enough money saved. It's like a national epidemic. And why would people continuously make bad decisions in the present moment, even when it meant like hurting themselves in the future? So we did a bunch of neuroscientific research with some of the best and brightest in the industry. We paired up with this guy named Adam Alter. And Adam Alter is an NYU professor. He's brilliant. He wrote one of the best books that I read in 2017 called Irresistible. We can get into this, but it's about the rise of addictive technology and the business of keeping us hooked. And if we want to get into that, Mark, happy to dive deep into that. But what Adam helped us to understand is this really interesting concept about how we are strangers to our future selves. So here's an example. Mark, if I were to ask you to think about yourself right now, and what are you feeling? What do you want in this present moment? Are you thirsty? Are you hungry? Are you sleepy? Your brain would be firing on all cylinders because like you are yourself, you can associate with that. And we could measure that on a brain scan. If I were to ask you to look out your window and think about a stranger, even if like you were to see that physical human being and ask you to think about what that person wants right now, the brain activity as measured on a brain map would dim because you can't associate into that person the way that you can associate into yourself. You can't feel what that person's feeling. And here's the juiciest part. The juiciest part is if I were to ask you, Mark, to think about your future self, to think about yourself at the age of 63, like retirement age, your brain activity would dim in the same way as when you thought about that stranger outside. And the punchline is that we are strangers to our future selves. You cannot associate into that future person of yourself the same way that you can't associate into a stranger. There are some techniques that can help you to break down that barrier a little bit, like meditation, mindfulness, like can help with that, but you can never get to the same level. Now, I don't want to say never. We haven't discovered a way yet to get into that same level of feeling about your future self as you can in the present moment of yourself. So one of the mechanisms for being able to draw meaning into this present moment, to get into that feeling state, because feeling is what catalyzes our actions, you have to pull that future goal into the present moment. So if you have a goal that's a year away, you actually have a really hard time associating into the mark of June 18th, 2019. But if you pull the finish line closer to say 90 days from now, you can get a bigger sense, a better sense of feeling around that. And that feeling can catalyze action. And better still is to pull something into the day, daily actions. So one of the things that I offer up in the book is like creating a, say, a 1 year vision, a goal, chunking that down to like, what do you need to do over the next 90 days to make a big part of that possible? And then what are the action steps you need to take on a daily basis that will then create this tipping point for you to get what you need? And the last thing, Mark, that I'll say before I'll pause here is I'd like to make a distinction between goals and intentions. Goals are outcome oriented. You are attached to an outcome. So a goal would be like, I want to lose 20 pounds. I want to double my income. I want to have this many podcast listeners. And that's useful to an extent. You can get so attached to the goal that everything else can become like miserable or toxic, or once you hit the goal, like you lose motivation, or you're not even happy, or your happiness is fleeting. What I love about setting intentions is not attached to an outcome per se. Intentions is attaching to the process, falling in love with the process of striving for that goal. So it's like, this is again holding the paradox of, maybe I want to double my podcast listeners. And the intention I have is that in going towards and striving for that, I want to experience levity. I want to be light about it. I want to have fun. I want to interview only the people that light me up. And I also have an intention of doing something on a daily basis that contributes to that. Intentions are much more flexible. When I see high achievers set these massive goals and they're like off track or they don't hit them, they think everything is a total failure or they give up on it completely because they haven't, you know, done something every day. When you're connected to an intention, you can course correct a lot more often. Like the analogy of a pilot is off target for 95% of the flight. As long as they stick their landing and hit their, you know, their takeoff, you're okay. That's how intentions, if you're able to create them with intentionality, can help you to function towards hitting the goals you want.
So, I mean, I really like this goals intention discussion. Goals are that outcome. Goals are that outward thing that you're going after, and intentions being the things you could do each day to get you closer, and some ideas for how you can feel, like how you want to feel throughout the process. And I really like how you're mentioning high achievers, because listeners here are high achievers. We're setting a lot of goals for ourselves. But one of the things that I see very often, you mentioned this, when you set like a goal or a vision that seems like a really out there vision that you don't accomplish right away, or in the case that I want to refer to, because like you could accomplish any big vision, but it's when you have like a lot of visions or a lot of goals, like a conglomerate. So I'm wondering, like, how exactly do you look at this like conglomerate of goals and like this big vision with so many different parts in it, and get the most important things done? Like, do you figure out a way to get everything in the conglomerate done, or do you like weed out some of the goals to focus on the ones that are the best?
Awesome. So there's some contextual places to start here and there we can drill down. Like, most people, again, high achievers is my audience, same thing as yours. Most high achievers have these massive, massive goals. And in many cases, it can seem like a conglomerate that have competing interests. So competing interests on your time, on your focus, on your energy, et cetera. The first contextual standpoint, the first contextual piece that I think is important to note is, I'm a big believer in Gary Keller's book called The One Thing. Gary Keller wrote this book called The One Thing. It's a number one New York Times bestselling book. And it's all about the surprisingly simple truth around extraordinary results. And extraordinary results are directly proportional to how narrow you can make your focus. And the focus he talks about is one thing. There's always one thing that if you were to accomplish, it would rise the tide, you know, a rising tide lifts all boats. By accomplishing that one thing, it makes everything in your life either easier or all those other things that you thought you had to do, it makes them irrelevant. And Peter Thiel, the founder of PayPal, writes a little bit about this as well in his book called From Zero to One. And Peter Thiel said one of like the biggest secrets in venture capital funding is that in a particular fund, let's just say like there are 10 firms that a fund invests in, there's always one that outperforms the other nine combined. So for example, like in one portfolio, there's a Facebook, and Facebook's value is worth more than the other nine investments combined. And what he also found, like in all of their years of investing, was that the number two thing ended up being, the number two investment in their fund ended up being worth more than all of the other eight investments combined. And so I saw a lot of parallels about this in people's lives in terms of, if you were to focus on one thing, that would rise the tide for everything else. When I was starting my business, there was a million different things that I needed to focus on. I decided to write the book first. So for a 90-day period of time, it was a temporary thing. I decided that the number one thing above and beyond all other forms of marketing, I was going to write my book. And I did that. I got it out. Within a few weeks of it getting out, someone read it, reached out to me on my website. In a 26-minute conversation, I had a $50,000 coaching client. So that's an example of how that manifested in my life. Another contextual piece of this is starting to understand that if you can build a skill set around alignment, looking for the alignments in all of the work that you do, then it will make those things that are seemingly separate, it will actually be wind at the sails. Right now, most people experience all of their goals as like a tug of war. And I experienced that when I was in corporate at Prudential Retirement. I had launched like my coaching business as a side hustle. I had all these responsibilities as a senior executive sales leader. And juggling the two of them started to feel overwhelming. I was losing joy, but I needed to keep the balls both in the air until I had this epiphany of, wait a minute, the business that I created, the side hustle, is actually specifically geared for the kinds of people that I lead in my own business. What if the intellectual property I was building out, what if I were to infuse that in my leadership style? Not only would I be able to, you know, train my people, but I would also get feedback on how this stuff is working. As soon as that alignment light bulb clicked in my mind, then all of the work came together. My people benefited from it. I was able to get validation on the work that I did. And all of a sudden, all this free time appeared. The levity, the enjoyment came back into my life. And I started building this muscle that any time in my life, Mark, that I feel like I have too many balls in the air, I either immediately look for where alignments are that I haven't found yet, or I go to this final piece, which is pruning. And pruning is an essential element of building capacity to do bigger things. It's actually eliminating certain things that just do not either bring you joy or are just not essential. The two best books I read on that, Marie Kondo's Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up. Her whole focus is on how do you get rid of the clutter in your life by purely focusing on what gives you joy. So not focusing on what to throw out, but only focusing on what gives you joy, building that muscle. And Necessary Endings by Dr. Henry Cloud talks about how some things die and other things need to be killed. You have to actively prune certain things in your life that are just not serving. And in many cases, there's a rational reason to do all the things we do, like spending time responding to email and every text, but those are lower level order things. And until you build the muscle to disrupt those reactive behaviors and prune some of the behaviors that are not ultimately getting to that vision that you want or not contributing big chunks, then you're going to continue to stay peddling around in small stuff and overwhelming yourself.
And just a brief side note before we continue, Dominic's mentioned a lot of great books for anyone who's trying to keep track of all the great books mentioned throughout this episode. Those will be in the show notes, markdebris.com/E215 for anyone who wants a book that can help them create, promote, and optimize their content for growth and revenue. We'll also throw in my book, Content Marketing Secrets, over at markdebris.com/book. But one thing that you mentioned that I just wanted to expand on a little bit is you mentioned that in a 26-minute conversation, you had a $50,000 client. And I'm wondering if you could share with us how you're getting clients to like pay you at that level, what is the work entailed with a $50,000 service?
Yeah. So again, this is very specific to super high-performing individuals who feel like they've turned over every rock already from a personal development perspective, meaning, you know, they've read the books, they've gone to the Tony Robbins seminar, they've done some coaching, but they feel like they've kind of exhausted, they know what's out there in the personal development sphere. And the kind of work that I'm talking about involves something entirely different. It's a next level, not just me, but two other people that I've worked with that are also extraordinary coaches come into a person's life on a daily basis. It's like all enveloping. You have three people working with you all day, every day, inside the cracks of like your normal business, but also setting aside specific times for us to work like you would with a traditional coach to catalyze massive and very fast change in your life over a specified container, typically not exceeding 3 months. And the people that we're talking to have typically been dealing with a specific recurring issue, a chronic issue that just continues to come up after they've gone after all the other low-hanging fruit in their life. You know, they've implemented the productivity procedures. They've, you know, they've done some therapy. They've optimized certain elements of their business. But like that one thing, whatever it is, keeps coming back over and over again, whether it's self-worth related, relationship related, money issues, that they're ready to like get this thing done once and for all. And the thing about a big price tag, Mark, and I have to be really thoughtful about how I share this, because this kind of information getting into the hands of manipulative people, it can do a lot of damage. But what I've found is that when I put a shit your pants investment out in front of somebody, like one that would require someone to truly stop in their tracks and even have a conversation with their spouse or partner, if that's the, you know, if they have a family dynamic about, you know, liquidating assets and holdings they have to make this kind of investment in themselves, what it does is it breaks them free from drift immediately. It calls into question, who would I have to be worth in order to invest in myself in this way? So it actually takes a lot of the onus off of me, where a lot of people who show up for a $5,000 coaching program think it's my job to do all the heavy work when it's really incumbent on the individual. We have to break down all of the resistance before a person even says yes to that. So by the time a person makes the investment and writes the $50,000 check, when we start on day one, all of the other BS that they would have come to the table with has already been cleared out, and now they're ready to do the work, and they're in this optimal zone of excitement and fear. So they're not in drift anymore. They're awake, they're locked in, and I can do my work. I've had people who can easily stroke a $10,000 check and it makes no difference to them, and they'll show up half-assed. This kind of investment with this kind of commitment from a physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, financial level, they show up, they do the work, and the results show for it.
Dominic, thank you for giving us some insights into how that will work. And it seems like obviously, like the more you charge, the more time investment on your end as well. And part of being successful, a big part actually, is to invest in yourself, whether it's in a service or in books or anything like that. But one of the things that is also true about anyone who's successful is that they face challenges along the way. You can actually say that about anyone. So with that in mind, Dominic, I'm wondering if you could share with us one big challenge you faced in your journey and a powerful lesson you learned during that challenge.
Oh, wow. You know, one of the most amazing obstacles I came across, this was before I had decided to make the leap from corporate into doing this kind of work. And I think a lot of your listeners will resonate with this, because many of them are probably at this inflection point of doing something big, but hitting that last level of resistance. So it was probably late 2013. I was meditating and I had this download of, I am meant to leave the corporate space and to spend my life's work, or at least the next chapter of my life's work, in helping others to design their future, like a future they can't wait to live into, breaking down their obstacles. And when I felt this, Mark, when that download came, my body started to vibrate energetically in a way that like I've never experienced before. It was just like, you know, I'd never been a woo-woo guy or anything like that. It just like was so palpable. I was like, holy shit, like this needs to happen. But then this voice came in my head immediately thereafter and it said, yeah, but you could never make as much money doing that as what you're doing right now. And without questioning it, I bought that story hook, line, and sinker. And so for 6 months, I just never did anything. I didn't move forward. But that dream about like creating my own future and helping others do the same and being an entrepreneur, it just like, it wouldn't go away. And then in February of 2014, same meditation, same download, same vibrations came into my body and was like, oh my God, Dominic, you need to do this. And the same resistance, that same voice in my head came back and was like, yeah, but you could never make as much money doing that. But my mindfulness practice, my awareness practice had deepened. So at that point, I was like, wait a minute, who says that that's the truth? I questioned that voice in my head and accepted it as truth. I was like, what if I could make 10 times as much money? It was just like, I didn't know how that was possible. I didn't even necessarily believe it was possible, but it was just an alternative story that I started to contemplate. And over the next couple of days, that as my mind was working on it subconsciously, I started finding like evidence of people who had done this, like a Marie Forleo or a Tim Ferriss or plenty of others, Ramit Sethi. And I was like, so maybe it is possible. And what I decided in that moment, without knowing the how, was in 2 years, like I decided to take my time with it. In February of 2016, I'm going to leave. And the reason for it was because I liked what I was doing at Prudential. I could stockpile as much money as I wanted, and then I could go and train and learn and work out all of the fear mechanisms that I had still left inside of me over that 2 year period in a safe environment, so that when it was time to leave, I could leave with like freaking confidence, even though I didn't know the total how of how it all unfold. And so that's exactly what ended up happening. In February 2016, I left just as I had planned. I walked out with supreme confidence, even without knowing exactly where my first client was going to come from. The how is not as important. So to like wrap up the lessons, Mark, I had to learn that like the closer I got to really my, like what my next layer of purpose was going to be, the bigger the resistance points came up. And it came up in the form of like limiting self-belief. And I had to question those limiting self-beliefs and offer an alternative script. And once I offered up an alternative script, I didn't actually have to resolve it. I didn't have to believe it fully. I just had to believe that there was a possibility that that new ending was out there for me, and not needing to know the full how. That's where a lot of high performers get stuck, is like needing to know every single bit of the how. All I needed to know was enough of the how, a few of the steps that would lead me to overcoming fears, how to be able to run a coaching practice, market online, like some of those little things that I knew that once I got going on it, I could figure out the rest. The how, all I had was about like 40% of it. And that was enough for me to leave behind a very lucrative 15-year career to doing what I'm doing now. And man, I'm never looking back.
Dominic, thank you for sharing with us that story. And like the mindset really is everything. So that's one of those stories that truly encapsulates that. You do have that resisting voice, but in some cases that could be where you need to head, because again, that resisting voice comes when like that next big transformation is coming. So I do appreciate you sharing that challenge and that powerful story for all of us. And one of the things that I want to ask you, I've asked you a bunch of questions throughout our time together, but what do you believe is one question that we need to be asking ourselves more often?
Oh, I love it. If I were to continue on the path that I am right now, and I were to wake up 3 years from now, living the path that I'm living right now, how would I feel? And I imagine that for many people, the answer would be disappointed and unhappy. And while there are many things that we're doing today that are certainly contributing to some semblance of success in our lives, I also know that most people that come to me and come to you, the reason why they're listening to you is because they feel like they're under clubbing in some area of their life. So constantly asking myself the question of, if I were to continue on the trajectory that I am right now, and I were to wake up 3 years from today, would I be happy and alive? If the answer is yes, then forge ahead. If the answer is no, it's probably time to do something about it, man.
Dominic, thanks for sharing that great question. It gives you a lot of long-term thinking for where you're heading. And thank you for sharing all of your great insights throughout our time together. And for anyone who wants to learn more about Dominic, get your copy of his book, Design Your Future, where you'll learn three simple steps that you can use to stop drifting and take command of your life. And Dominic's also working on a few workshops that he's doing. And I wonder if you could actually share with us a little more about that for anyone interested.
Very cool. So the quick overview is that I am diving deep into men's work in new era masculinity, because there's a lot of toxic masculinity that's out there that I think you hear a lot about in the Me Too movement, but I'm much more interested in actually helping work with men who are heart-centered, who are in search of deeper meaning in their lives and connecting with other men who are performing at the highest of levels, but also don't know how to connect with men on some of the more vulnerable parts of our lives, specifically around sexuality and men's sexual empowerment. And what I have found, and I call this series, and I have a monthly workshop on this, and it's tongue-in-cheek, called The Discerning Dick, Sexual Wisdom for the Modern Man. And I run this workshop in New York City. It's a free workshop. It happens once a month. And what this is about is helping to illuminate the fact that most men are blind to how little active participation they've played in the forces that have created their behaviors around sexuality, and how all roads of our identity, our masculinity, our self-esteem, our self-image, our relationships with women, all of those lead through our relationship with our dick, with our sexuality. And most men have never done more than a surface level exploration of that. So I talk about the forces of our family, our faith, our friends, and how at an early age, those shaped what we do today, what we think today, what we desire today. And so if you're interested, you can reach out to me on my website. There's a contact form that just has you be able to connect with me. And I can share with you the details of where these meetings take place. It's usually 2 hours in length. Women come to these as well as supporters of men who are trying to level up in this part of their life. And it's a very safe, usually very casual environment that we have these discussions in. So Mark, thanks for letting me share a little bit about that.
My pleasure, Dominic. And again, thank you for coming on the show, sharing your great insights with us on how we can design our future. And there's a lot of great lessons in this episode. So thank you for sharing your wisdom with us. It was such a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thanks, brother. Good talking to you too, man.
How does over 100 retweets per day sound to you? My free ebook, 27 Ways to Get More Retweets on Twitter, has you covered. I use the methods within this ebook to get over 10,000 retweets every single quarter. To learn